Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which three random guys talk about random books until randomness takes over the universe and we all go cold.
Yay, finally.
But I'm cold now.
Yes. Today we are talking about Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman. So, Kevin, would you grace us with a reading for the back of the book?
That's an accurate description. Introducing an instant classic. Master storyteller Neil Gaiman presents a dazzling version of the great Norse myths. Neil Gaiman has long been inspired by ancient mythology in creating the fantastical realms of his fiction. Now he turns his attention back to the source, presenting a bravura rendition of the great northern tales. In Norse mythology, Gaiman fashions primeval stories into a novelistic arc that begins with the genesis of the legendary Nine Worlds, delves into the exploits of the deities, dwarves, and giants, and culminates in Ragnarok, the twilight of the gods and the rebirth of a new time and people. Gaiman stays true to the myths while vividly reincarnating Odin, the highest of the high, wise, daring, and cunning, Thor, Odin's son, incredibly strong yet not the wisest of gods, and Loki, the son of a giant, a trickster, and unsurpassable manipulator. From Gaiman's deft and witty prose emerge the gods with their fiercely competitive natures, their susceptibility to being duped into duping others, and their tendency to let passion ignite their actions, making these long-ago myths breathe pungent life again.
Pungent life, huh?
There was something pungent about it.
Yes. So, Barry, what did you think?
So, I'm going to qualify this review.
It would be great if Neil Gaiman would come onto our podcast. Is that our qualification?
Well, I'm pretty sure that A, he's never going to, and B, after I think he listens to this, he definitely won't ever. But
yeah, not because of the review, just because of the overall quality.
Right. We're definitely, yeah, the cheap seats. So I think if you really like Norse mythology, this is an awesome book. You know, obviously Neil himself is, hey, that's a Twitter name.
Oh, really? Whose is it?
Mine.
Oh, good, good.
I think he does a great job narrating it, and I think he did a great job, you know, pulling all the material together. So I don't think that I am as big a fan of Norse mythology as others, so that's where I'll leave it.
Okay.
Good job, Barry.
Thank you. I'll try to be a little less ambiguous in the future. And we hand it off to Kevin.
I liked it, but I had kind of it was more my expectation that kind of messed with it than anything else. You know, I kind of had assumed it was going to be, you know, like Homer or something like that, you know, meaning like Odysseus or like a long form saga of some kind. And that's not what these stories are. They're a bunch of stories basically, you know, or lays or whatever they called them. So I was expecting sort of a lot more interlocking stuff, you know, before I even got into the book at all. And then the main thing that stuck out really was that there was a lot of obvious stuff. Like, you know, you can see what was going to happen like long before it actually happened in the story, mm-hmm. you know, so there was a lot of repetition and stuff. So it felt very like what it really was, like, you know, tall tales and like folk tales and things like that. So, I mean, within that structure, I mean, I liked that once I kind of realized, you know, what it was. So it was like kind of like usual, like by the time I got to the end, I'm like, oh, I see what it was supposed to be.
And so this is less a review and more of a detailing of your emotional history.
Exactly.
I'd be seriously impressed if one day Kevin actually started a book and really liked it and by the end actually hated it.
Yeah, there are some books I like at the beginning, but actually...
wow, since it's almost finished.
We couldn't have that happen.
Beep.
In our spoiler section, I'll go more into the sort of, you know, the source material a tiny bit, you know, with the poetic eddas and I guess the prose edda that the stuff's mostly based on.
We don't want to tell anybody how Ragnarok ends.
Shh, it's a secret.
I will say, I hate the way my brain works sometimes in that...
Kevin is now reviewing his own brain.
Yes. Just sometimes?
It's just sometimes, yeah. That, you know, I'm listening to the book and I'm imagining, you know, the actors from the movies, Thor and Loki and so forth. Like,
oh,
you know.
God, you mean like, the Marvel Universe?
Yes, exactly. It's like, God, would you just stop it? You know, just, I don't want to imagine that. Just, I want to imagine sort of an archetype. Okay, shut up, shut up, shut up. Like, anyway.
Yeah.
So, overall... thumbs up, but you know, qualified in the make sure you know what you're getting.
Yeah, unfortunately, despite just giving Kevin some crap for having sort of a vague it is what it is review, that is in fact exactly what this book is. It is what it is.
Well, it's not like you can, you know, really, you know, improve upon, you know, pre-existing myth stories, right?
Right. I don't know if it quite translates, because I think he translated it from English to English, but a, sort of a way of thinking of it is a new translation. I mean, yes, yeah. I know they weren't originally written in English, but I don't think he went back to the original language. He's going from translations
and
translating those further into English.
Is it like an interpretive reading?
Yeah, I would think that that would be a good description of it. And I thought that it was sort of interesting because it kind of pulled together a lot of the Norse tales that I had read over my life and sort of told them in order. And that was sort of an interesting way of thinking about things. My favorite part of it was the introduction, where he was talking about his experiences growing up and reading first the comic books about Thor and Loki and so forth. And I mean, like you said, these days we have a very slanted, bizarre, you know, alien super civilization view of the Norse gods, which I think would have surprised the original tellers of those tales quite a bit.
Puny god.
Yes, exactly. It's just like, oh, yes, and where does the Hulk fit into your cosmology?
Partly Ragnarok.
I mean, on the other hand, I think that if you could sufficiently explain our modern pantheon to the original Norse telltellers, they would recognize it as being the same kind of thing. I have yet to understand whether or not the Norse gods were sort of religiously venerated in quite the same way that, you know, we do today, or if they were more like, say, Paul Bunyan or something like that.
You mean like fairy tales, you know?
Yeah.
Well, essentially warnings to children not to do these things.
Or do them because they're awesome, which is sort of more like what these seem to be.
Everything turns out great at the end.
Because, you know, Thor is just always an idiot, and it generally works out well. There was one scene that I particularly liked, so I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but...
Spoilers!
No, it's just...
Can you spoil a myth?
Thor woke up one day and, you know, discovered that something bad had happened and decided that it was Loki's fault. He normally just had a role to do that immediately whenever something was wrong, because he found it saved a lot of time.
Right.
Where did all my hair go?
Exactly.
It's sort of like the Gilligan.
Loki. That would be kind of funny, doing a 1950s, 1960s sitcom about those, you know,
those wacky Norse gods.
Yeah, the Odinsons.
God.
What, the Bifrost got tossed around in the ocean and they ended up on an island somewhere?
I'm imagining it sort of as an I Love Loki kind of thing.
Oh, God.
I didn't realize I was going to say that till it came out of my mouth.
Don't you dare cut that.
It was predestined. And thus Ragnarok begins.
It has only been awaiting our treatment of the Norse myths as 1950s sitcom.
Or is it more like a, you know, 1980s thing with the Three's Company and Mr. Furley's the giant?
Yeah, actually, I think of Kramer as being Loki. You could do a decent job, say, mapping How I Met Your Mother people onto...
So I think the list of sitcoms that don't fit into this idea is much smaller than the list of sitcoms that do fit into this.
But I'm just getting started.
I defy you to do the Smurfs next.
Okay, that's easy, because they're both sort of Nordic myths. I mean, Nordic tales. I'm not going to call the Smurfs actually a myth. But
because it happens.
Since you did promise me a dessert if I turned off the Steven mode in my brain, I'm going to hold myself back.
No dessert now. Turn it back on. I want to see where this goes.
Intriguing, Commander. Let's see. Okay, so Papa Smurf is obviously Odin. Let's see. Which one was Hefty? There was there was the Smurf that liked to punch things. We'll get him a left and a right. That's obviously Thor. And I think Brainy would be Loki. He's always unless
Are you sure that there was Jokey. Gargamel.
No. Gargamel would be like one of the frost giants. I mean, he's even a giant.
That's true. He is.
And this is terrifying. And I love it.
What about the cat, the Midgard serpent or something?
Oh, absolutely. Which was in the form of a cat. Oh, my God. All right. Well, before we destroy anybody else's mind, it's time for us to move to our
more, please,
increasingly pointless spoiler section.
You can't spoil a myth. It already happened.
We shall return, probably, for we are sci-fi.
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 Yeah, you should really know better than to to get me going when I haven't had a lot of sleep.
And now to turn it up to volume 11.
Yeah, I guess Brainy would work as Loki. He is always getting people into trouble. By.
I mean, it's sort of a combination of Brainy and, wasn't there a jokey Smurf?
Yeah.
That was always setting off explosives.
And Smurfette was blonde, so she already fits in as...
Sure, she'd be Freya.
Freya, yeah.
Yeah, no, obviously it was based on that.
And which Smurf is Babe the Ox?
Well, they're all blue.
So it doesn't matter?
They all convert.
Is there like a chunky Smurf that we could use? Or
no, they all become Babe the Ox when they form.
You mean like seven mini Smurfs become one giant Smurf?
Yeah, but it has to take all of them, not just seven.
Okay, well, you may be wondering why I haven't welcomed you back to the spoiler section of the podcast. That's because this was originally going to be the pre-roll, but I'm not sure. I think we're going to keep it. I haven't had much sleep.
Yay!
I've had plenty, and I still find this entertaining.
Yes. All right, so I guess we'll move on to our usual questions. Were there any standout scenes? I pick... The farting bird.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I will fart mead upon my enemies and yes. blind them.
Now, that was, I believe, Odin who transformed himself into the form of a bird. It seemed like everybody could shapeshift except for Thor.
He's too dumb.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that, you know, it just probably never occurred to him to do it.
He's more hammer than nail.
Yes. In this world, you are either a hammer or anvil.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Six.
But anyway,
and we're done.
So, where was I?
Farting
the
bird.
Yes. So
that's where bad poetry comes from. Yes.
Yes. Odin was attempting to steal back some mead that was made from the blood of one of his sons.
I don't know if it was his son. I can't remember. It was the smartest of the gods,
yes.
who was like the sage or whatever. And he goes out and I don't remember who it was that killed him now, but.
I believe it was either a dwarf or
a giant.
Or a giant.
Yes.
I mean, or somewhere
or
in
a dark elf. There's a few bad people, I guess. But anyway. Right. They kind of said, well, if you're so smart, couldn't you guess why I have this stuff here? And he's like, well, probably to kill me and drain my blood to make mead that would give people poetry. And like, yeah, you're right.
Weirdly enough.
Thanks for the idea.
Yeah. Part of that was actually used in like a Sherlock Holmes movie, at least. I don't know if it was in a Sherlock Holmes story or not. But Moriarty basically said, oh, Sherlock, what would you do if you had your enemy in your grasp? Oh, I'd drain him of all his blood. That would be really bad. That's what I'm exactly going to do. It's just like, I would let him go, you know?
Yeah.
Just
how clever.
To know that he'd been beaten.
I'd use my tickle guns on him.
Right. Those were among the friendly stories that they had where he drained his blood just to make mead. And
yes. It is sort of terrifying because I remember reading a kid's book about this stuff.
Well, I think they were a couple of the dwarves, weren't they, that made stuff?
Yes. Dwarves apparently made everything.
Well, yeah, but I think that's who made the mead.
Yes. And it was like the best mead ever. And if you drank it, then you would be like totally poetic. And so Odin had to trick a whole bunch of people. Basically, it was, if you think about it, it was basically a human hacking routine.
But performed by 10-year-olds.
Right. And on 10-year-olds, yes.
Yes.
Because everybody's just like, oh, you helped me for a day, so you're my good friend now.
Right. Or,
I would come with you because you are so pretty. Oh, you think so?
Right. Well, do you want any of this meat? No, no, I don't care about that, but you're beautiful. And then like the next day, oh, I'd sing a great song to you if I had some of that meat. Well, maybe you can have a little bit. I don't want any.
Let me show you what a small sip that I can take. Oops, I drank it all.
Yeah, they never really said, it seemed like the implication was that he was going to sort of, actually, yeah, didn't he regurgitate it right
at the end? Yeah, then he spit it out
Use it to resuscitate them later, apparently. They didn't really say that, but he was alive later in another story.
What?
The god who was drained of blood.
Is that who we're talking about?
Well, no, I'm saying that Odin, when he was flying back, regurgitated the mead, right?
Yes.
But what I'm saying is it seemed like the implication was they were going to use that to sort of, you know, revivify the god.
I have no recollection of that senator.
Well, no, I don't think it happened in the telling. But later, at the very end of the book, he comes back and they said, you know, such and such, who was once dead. Remember the guy who comes back, who's at the very end?
Jesus?
Yes, that one. But he comes, when they're trying to find Loki right before the Ragnarok scene, and he turns into a fish, and the smart guy comes and sort of like does his Sherlock Holmes and deduces like, well, why would there be a burned net? If only he was hiding as a fish, he invented a net to catch himself, and then he burned it so he wouldn't use it to catch him. Which did sound, I did actually think, oh, this does sound like a Sherlock Holmes thing.
Really? It kind of reminded me of like some, you know, long series of MASH episodes, you know, culminating in, you know, Houlihan's bra appearing on a flagpole someplace.
God. Okay, so map MASH to the Norse pantheon.
Well, I think Colonel Potter would obviously be Odin.
Sure.
And I think Hawkeye would be Loki.
Yes.
And I don't know who would be Thor. Maybe it's Frank Burns, but there's a strong argument to be made for maybe, you know, Trapper John or
sure
somebody. And then obviously Houlihan is Freya.
Not a whole lot of choice there.
You know, I think the Frost Giants is probably like, I don't know, maybe Rizzo and Klinger. I don't know.
Or the Koreans.
Or them too. Who knows? I mean, really don't see a whole lot of the enemy in MASH other than on a table.
Would take away some of the sitcom aspect if they were actually killing people.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still drawing a blank on who's going to fart mead.
That would definitely be Alan Alda. That would be one of their later term stories. Okay, decent mapping. Did we have any other particular favorite scenes? I talked about one of them earlier on where Thor woke up and just decided, oh, yes, my wife's hair is gone. I'm going to get mad at Loki about this because it's going to be his fault anyway. And he was right, was the funny part.
Of course.
Well, there's only one jerk in all of the universe there, so.
Right.
In the nine worlds. Yeah, there were a lot of like archetypal scenes that I liked, but they didn't really do anything in the story. I mean, other than like they sort of said, well, Odin sacrificed himself to himself on the world tree, you know, Yggdrasil or whatever it was called. Like, And as he's about to die, he like suddenly gains the power of magic or something and reading the runes, and he can do all this stuff. And then he later on, he ends up like, he wants to take one sip from this, that pool of knowledge or something that somebody was protecting, and they said, okay, but you got to pluck your eye out. And he's like, ah, okay. It was hard to get here. I figured I'd have to sacrifice something. Like, that is one thing that kind of stuck out in, you know, which again, kind of makes me think of Paul Bunyan or like, you know, Tall Tales, where it's like everything was, and the biggest this, and you know, he drank the entire ocean. And so it's like, it's kind of like all these tales have, the orders of magnitudes are kind of messed up, or there's not, the scales kind of like are very loose the way things, because I was even trying to think, okay, there was, what was it? One of the stories where he went out, I guess, was it Thor? Thor was, God, that doesn't sound right, but well, because Thor wasn't the smart one, but Thor was trying to get the big brewing kettle from the giant.
So that was Thor, but he had a smart person with him.
Okay. And he was
like,
I brought my brain with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But then he's like, well, you know, he says, let's go out fishing. And, you know,
that was a fun thing. It's just like, you know, oh, I hope you know what you're doing.
He's like, you're such a tiny little thing. You'll probably die. It's so cold out there.
but there was also a throwaway line was Thor was just doing whatever he felt like doing, like usual.
Right. And so this was one where he kind of does his own thing and it ends up working because he's just sort of, Thor is, you know, the mightiest of everything, apparently, even though he's tiny compared to the giant. So, you know, they're like, the giant rows out in his boat where, and you're kind of imagining, okay, they're both about the same. And then you think, okay, well, the giant's supposed to be a giant and Thor is supposed to be tiny and he's rowing some boat out. And then like the giant catches like two whales, right? And just chucks them in the boat. And you're like, okay, that boat's probably pretty big then. And so there's a lot of scale things that are difficult to sort of visualize in a realistic way. Not that these are like realistic stories, but you're thinking about, okay, then Thor's like rowing these like giant paddles or something. And some of those things were just interesting in the way they felt very much like, you know, a campfire tale, right? Where it's right. Like, and then the biggest, you know, whale did this and whatever. And
exactly.
Like you said, I did really like the introduction. I kind of wished that was more like 100 pages or something. He always, I guess what I, my point is he spent, you know, presumably a lot of time researching it. It would have been interesting if he had kind of done a bit of a walkthrough of that process and just, and kind of annotated maybe some of this stuff or something. I think for me,
you wanted an appendix N?
Yeah, kind of, or I kind of wanted something that went more into the detail because I can understand how most people would not want to read the Edda. And I actually pulled it up this morning just to kind of look through it. And I think I kind of wanted it to be a more archaic telling of it in a way, like, you know, more like an old style telling. And he was, I mean, it's not a surprise, but, you know,
it sounded like Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. Neil Gaiman wrote the way Neil Gaiman writes, which I actually really like, but I think for this subject, I would have preferred him to maybe depart a little bit from it. You know, he's very colloquial the way he writes and very, you know, kind of, you know, not trying to be formal at all. And usually I think it works really well, but I think in some of these cases, I would have preferred it to be a little more, I don't know, stuffy in a weird way.
But that was actually a thing that I liked was, yeah, it was just an interesting way of looking at the tales as just campfire tales.
Right. And I agree with what he said, like, you know, hey, the joy in these tales is telling them and, you know, you should do that yourself.
Right.
And yeah, I could see this working, you know, you're in the biting cold out camping and like, you know, telling this tale, you know, that's when things like the repetition and stuff kind of make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with any kind of like non-written story, there's a lot of, you know, I've read some other things where they talk about like some of the old Greek stuff where like, and I don't remember any specific example, but the type of example they would give is whenever they would talk about a character, they would say, and, you know, the great blonde such and such or whatever, and like, you know, the mighty whoever, and they right. wouldn't just say or, a person's name. They'd always say the mighty, you know, the mighty Zeus. You know, they wouldn't just say Zeus. They would always say the mighty Zeus. And they're saying this is kind of like a
right
a memory technique.
Or the wine dark sea. That was a repeated thing that they would always say, which is weird because the sea doesn't look that much like wine unless you've had a lot of it.
Only when it's dark.
Yes.
And so, you know, they kind of talk about those repetitions being sort of like memory devices to help the tale sort of be told and not forgotten.
Right.
And so you can imagine, you know, that kind of thing probably happening, you know, in all cultures, having that kind of, you know, technique just sort of coming about just automatically.
Okay.
So I like the part about Thor's hammer being not particularly perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I never realized that the handle was too short.
Well, that can be fixed later.
Yes. Well, this, you know, tack weld a little piece on the end there, but...
part of it was just like, hey, it's got to be nice to be a god. You know, he's just like, well, you two and you two, you're going to have a contest to see who can make the better presents for me.
Yes, and I'm not going to pay you for any of it.
I'm not going to pay you for any of it.
But I'll judge who's the best.
I'll judge who's the best.
And I'll keep everything.
And I'll keep everything.
And they're like, oh, can we please?
Yeah. Although yeah. I did rather like the, oh, yes, let's make it more interesting. Let's include your head, Loki.
Yes, god-level graft.
Right. What was that wager? It was like, I'm trying to remember why. I mean, how that came up. They thought he was messing with them or something.
Well, he was. I forget exactly
why.
Well,
he was.
But then you can't take my head without taking a little piece of my neck, which would render the entire deal null and void.
Right. Slippery slope argument. Yes.
Yes. I did actually find that funny that, like, you know, the gods' best thing were because Loki was messing around and for no apparent reason decided to cut off Thor's wife's hair permanently.
Yeah.
Like, it was sort of like, I cut it off. It's hilarious. And, like, you know, of course, was that the one where he's like, Loki?
Yeah, exactly.
And then it was
laugh track.
Yeah. And then it was sort of like, but it'll never grow back, you know, because I magically cut it off a little bit too much. I pulled all the follicles out or something.
Yeah. And it was never stated why on earth he would want to do this.
Right.
Maybe in the original Edda, there's some kind of bizarre reason given.
Nor what he did with it.
Maybe he's got this whole cross-dressing outfit plan.
he made himself a blonde Birkin.
Well, he did wind up cross-dressing. He did wind up being a mare and then giving birth to a foal at one point.
Right. And I was, yeah. And in fact, some of that stuff was funny because there was the one where they wanted to get, Thor's hammer was stolen, right?
Right.
And they said, okay, well, you're going to have to, you know, he wanted Freya, or who it was? You know, in marriage. And she's just like, screw you. Yeah, like,
this was a really, really big, ugly ogre.
Yeah. And so, Loki's
it wasn't actually Loki behind it.
Yeah. He's like, well, why don't you dress up like Freya? And
I'm just like, we are in Bugs Bunny land.
Yeah. That was completely a good example of one of those like repetitive things too, where he's like, you know, but you won't like it. It'll be fine. You know, no, you won't like it. It'll be fine. We'll see how great it is, you know? And he's like, okay, fine. You dress up like her. And he's like, we don't like it. None of us do. Like, you know, it's just, you know, like you said, that was very Bugs Bunny, like along with the dress up part. And
right.
And then that later on, I was thinking, well, you know, considering that Loki could transform into any shape, he could easily have just transformed into, you know, Freya or, you know, another maiden, right? And just sort of showed up. But that would have removed the humor.
But it wouldn't have stopped him from eating an entire ox.
That was pretty funny.
Yes. So, yeah. So actually, this is like a very bizarre thing that, you know, I go this morning, I look up the Poetic Edda, and I'm like, well, let's just see what the original translation at least looks like.
Runes?
Well, they did show pictures of, like, there's some rune stone that was discovered from the 1200s or something or before that you know, had pieces of the story. But so the Edda was originally... I forget the exact date, but I think it was like 1000 to 1200, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those were written down, as he mentioned in the book, probably a couple hundred years after, you know, Christianity kind of come to the area. So they were writing down some of the stories, you know, at that point. And so this was still, you know, quite a while after the original tales were told. So, you know, who knows how much of it was lost, but, you know... The poetic one starts out, hearing, I ask, from the holy races, from Heimdall's sons, both high and low. Thou wilt, Val Father, that well I relate old tales I remember of men long ago. So it's, you know, not as cryptic as I thought it might be. You know, it's not like the Gilgamesh, you know, that's like, is barely intelligible unless you do a lot of editing.
Right.
But then, so this is the thing that actually kind of blew me away, and I knew that Tolkien had, you know, knew a lot about Norse mythology and kind of based his stuff. But what I didn't know, and you'd think I would have just stumbled upon this, is that the names of all the dwarves and Gandalf and everything is like basically straight out of like the first couple verses of the Poetic Edda.
Ah.
They basically say, the dwarves in the earth, as Durin said, you know, skip a few lines, Biffer, Bofer, Bomber, Nori, On and Onar, and then, you know, Vig and Gandalf, Vindolf, Thrain, Threk and Thorin, and like one of the names translates to Oak and Shield, and there's like all these things that you're like, wow, this was just like straight out of it. You know, he didn't even make the names up, which, I mean, I don't think is a bad thing. It's just, I had no idea.
Yeah, I
Tolkien
didn't know either.
Was such a hack.
And it's all right. He had a footnote. He cited it.
Oh, yeah. He cited everything.
And so, it is interesting because, you know, Gandalf means magic elf, supposedly. at least in the footnotes here. So that was their translation, I guess.
All right. Well, I think it's time for us to take up our spears and go march off to fight in Ragnarok, where we will fight all day.
And fart mead.
Fart mead, and then, you know, feast in the halls all night. And I'm just like, and this is the good place you go when you die. Yes.
And don't forget to throw away all your leather scraps.
That's right, to make the shoes.
That was the most bizarre little footnote in the whole thing, was sort of like, if you want to help the gods for Ragnarok, throw away your leather scraps.
Paid for by the Leather Council.
I know. Yeah, I swear, that was
my,
like...
My brain sort of short-circuited at that point. I was like, what?
And then all the scraps from everyone through all eternity magically go through the, you know, the sock dryer transport or something to what's his name, who makes the magic shoe that can defeat Fenris Wolf.
Yes, it's important. It matters.
Our friendship.
Yes. Boo Boo Sousa.
Fenris Wolf, sir.
God.
Now you got to finish it.
It matters.
Our Fenris, it matters. Fenris Wolf, son.
Fenris, it matters. Everyone's like, what?
I defy you to leave that in.
All right. Okay, well, before we finally reach the end of Ragnarok and the end of the world, I think it is time for us to depart, for we are sci-fi.
Sci-fi?
Sci-fi.
Yeah.
Check it.